Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
It was a diesel truck, Jeff.
No, I got it.
You got it? Okay. All right.
I'm going with it.
Is this our
welcome
first
to the payoff?
Welcome to the payoff. Is this our first diesel match?
No, I think we've had a couple with him before.
It's been long enough. Yeah, we have. You're right. We've been doing this long enough that sometimes I forget what we've covered, or I forget if we've covered a guy before. And that's good, man. We're closing in on 100 episodes before you know it. Can you believe that?
This is why I can't totally. I don't fault like Michael Cole or like Byron or any of those guys for forgetting stuff anymore, because yeah. And so for our listeners, this is episode 73 for us. We've got, you know, a few more planned out, you know, kind of know what we're doing. Like, yeah, like it, you do this for the better part of 2 years, you're going to forget some shit. It just happens. So I can't fault, you know, they get a lot of shit some weeks about like, oh, they forgot about this, or yeah, it's, some of that's Vince, but at the same time, like, we don't remember everything either, just like they don't. So right. Whatever, it's fine. So.
Well, how the hell are you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, what are we, 2021, I think. Yeah, that's right. So doing that, you know, more wrestling. We're still approaching rapidly here, the Royal Rumble. So that's always exciting. And it's just, I mean, the Rumble's just, I get hype about it no matter what. And so,
yeah, I think that's a good point, right? Like, even in a down year, even if you're not excited about the current product, I mean, you have to love the Rumble, right?
Last few years, they've done a good job with it too, both men and women. It's exciting. You know, it's just, I'm glad they're doing a women's one now, because it gives them a chance to do something different. I think
the women's Rumble's been good every year. Is this like maybe like the fourth one now?
Yeah, they have been. Absolutely.
The first one was great. Like the first one I actually thought was better than the men's. Yeah, because there are a bunch of women you hadn't seen in 10, 15 years. They're coming out. It was great. I think that every year the women's Rumble's been really good. So it's always something fun to look forward to. You know, you get some legends, you get the current ones, and then you get a couple NXT call-ups. And yeah, it's just a really fun match. I love them having the women's. And I don't think it – I actually think – like some stuff, it's like, you know, when they have like, you know, two women's Hell in a Cells, or like, you know, some of that stuff I think is a little redundant, but like two Royal Rumbles on the same night, I have no problem with. Obviously you divide them up throughout the night. I really enjoy it. Yeah. You know, here's an interesting thing. You think about like the tent pole stuff, right? Elimination Chamber, Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series, TLC, yep. Money in the Bank. I'm probably leaving a couple out, but I just rattled off a bunch of those. I don't think there's any of them I look forward to more than the Royal Rumble, right? Like if you just said, hey, current product being what it is, you're not excited about much of anything, but what's the one thing that you always get hyped up about? To me, it'd be the Royal Rumble. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that it's hard not to. And yeah, things are different right now, but I still think like WWE is built to put on a TV show. And so I don't think we're going to be disappointed with what we get from the Royal Rumble this year. And this will be the fourth Rumble
for women. Yeah, yeah. Doesn't it feel like a lifetime ago that Edge came out in front of a huge crowd?
Yeah, because it was. That's the thing. It was a year ago. And so, yeah, it just crazy. But yeah, we got a lot of Rumble to talk about. So, yeah, this is an exciting one, though.
All right. Any other announcements before we get started?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, this one, who picked this one? This was a kind of sub in. You and I had a different match slated for this one. And then we were kind of looking, we weren't super happy. And then when we saw this one on the list, we're like, wait a minute, let's do that. And so I know that's why we kind of picked this one. And so it was a late minute or last minute addition to our card, but that's not a bad thing. So this should be good.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to, you know, I think we'll get a chance to talk about Diesel's run as champion. Okay, I think that'll be interesting for us to talk about and you know, what went well or what didn't go so great with that. And then also, you know, we'll have a little Bret Hart conversation. And, you know, knowing we're going to do this episode, I've just been thinking a lot about Bret Hart lately, and I got some stuff I want to share that, I don't know. You may agree. You probably are going to disagree. I'm sure many people listening are going to disagree, but I'm pretty confident in my opinions on this one. So I'm looking forward to sharing those.
That's good. You got some thoughts on Bret. I got some thoughts on Diesel. So this should be a good one. So I say, if you're ready, let's jump into this one,
let's
man.
Let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So Rumble 95, January 22nd, 1995. We're in Tampa. This is the USF Sundome. So this is actually, where I guess South Florida had some, maybe the basketball team played or something like that. I don't even know if the arena that the Tampa Bay Lightning play in would have been there. Or if that's where they played at the time. No idea. But I mean, they got 10,000 in this venue, kind of did like a little bit of a beach theme, the cover for the, I guess VHS tape at the time, but still the pay-per-view on the network is a beach, which is kind of funny because they weren't that close to a beach, but yeah, whatever. So, just these Rumbles, man, I feel like every year in the 90s, like I could just tell you everything that happened at every single one of these, you know, they were all just so iconic. You know, we're now a couple years into the idea of the winner getting the title shot at WrestleMania, which was just such a good addition, man. It gave you stakes because there were a couple years in a row where like Hogan would win, but it didn't really mean anything. And now it just means so much because you get the main event WrestleMania. Like, what bigger stakes outside of the actual title could there be, which really added a ton to this. So these were all exciting. This was kind of must order for me for sure. So let's get through the card here. You know, the main event was the Rumble. That's, you know, that's really what they're plugging. We start off with a 18-minute Intercontinental Championship match with Jeff Jarrett defeating Razor Ramon. That's JEFFJARRETT. Then in a 12-minute match, The Undertaker defeating IRS Erwin R. Scheister.
In a dud of a match. Not good. Yeah, okay. This was, but look, spoiler, you know, I won't, for no spoilers on the reviews of this match, but this Undertaker match was an absolute dud. Every review I read.
Well, lost in all the Undertaker folklore is the fact that around this time, he was involved in some really shitty matches. And I'm not blaming him for that, but there were just a lot of shitty Undertaker matches and feuds at this time.
Yep. Yeah.
And we get our heavyweight championship match, which we're going to cover. Then we had a tag team tournament final to crown new tag team championships. They were vacant at this time. The 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly of all teams would beat Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka, who are accompanied by Ted DiBiase as part of the Million Dollar Corporation. Now, Jeff, what's the significance of that match? Do you remember?
I do not.
That's when Lawrence Taylor got involved with Bam Bam Bigelow.
That's right. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
No. Well, a couple of fun facts. Number one is I just played a charity golf outing not that long ago, and Lawrence Taylor was there. You know, the interesting thing is, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I saw him from, like, I turned around the corner. He was right there. He's still a big son of a bitch. And he probably could have just destroyed me if I, you know, was trying to run past him with a football. But, you know, what's interesting is if I would have had a chance to talk to him, you know, everybody else would have been like, oh, tell me about this time you sacked so-and-so, or tell me about the Super Bowl or playing for Bill Parcells. And then I would have been asking him about fucking WrestleMania 11. Bam, bam.
Heck yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right. I saw Bob Uecker. He was playing behind me in golf one time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I asked him about wrestling. Like, oh, Hall of Famer, you know, and like, I'm talking wrestling, not baseball. He was laughing. So, yeah. All right. So the Bigelow stuff happened. Now, here's what's interesting about this, Jeff, is Keller would say this feels like the beginning of a worked shoot type thing we're going to start seeing in wrestling. So Ooh. This whole lot. Yeah. So, you know, who would have thought that the dawn of the work shoot in some ways was actually this, where, you know, they never really said, oh, this is a wrestling angle. And if you remember, it was super intense and it looked legit. Like, it, they did a great job. Go back and watch it on YouTube if you're listening to this. Really, really cool. But the next night on Raw, Vince is, you know, trying, remember, he's on commentary at the time. He's trying to play it up like it was legit. But then he did say, hey, there's a, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow's been suspended for 30 days. That's when Keller was like, well, you know, it's going to be an angle and seems like he's getting involved in WrestleMania, but they were trying to play it off like it was real. And if you're watching it live, you know, now you see like Gronk get involved and you're like, ah, yeah, whatever, part of the show. Ha ha. But it was that beginning of the work shoot in a lot of ways. And keep in mind, this is 95. This is not Attitude Era Mike Tyson stuff. So right. I thought they did a great job with it, man. They had some Hall of Famers involved. That might be a fun match for us to cover at some point, but I thought they did a decent job with that. So let's see what else was going on. So the final WCW match of Jean-Paul Levesque would also take place at this time, Jeff.
Sounds like someone that should maybe keep an eye on.
On commentary, Dusty Rhodes said, and I quote, he seems on the down road as if he might want to do something other than real wrestling, if you know what I mean. So he's taking a shot at him going to the WWF. And man, who would have thought that Jean-Paul Levesque would become what he became? Ironic, it comes from Dusty Rhodes, whose kid now is, you know, involved in this startup promotion to take on the
WWE. Running his own show. Yeah.
Just, you know, who would have thought? So, so we had the tag match. We had that going on in the business. Obviously, we have the Royal Rumble, a shorter match. It was only 38 minutes. So I don't know if I think they said they were supposed to come in every minute, or maybe it was they were supposed to be every 2 minutes, but it was a minute and a half. So every year was a little bit different. And some years they just have them in different increments. But this was a relatively short Rumble with the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels winning. This is the iconic ending where the British Bulldog thinks he won, but he didn't. Shawn wins it. Kind of an upset, man. You know, Shawn was just, you know, he wasn't a world champion competitor at this point. So this was a big night for the Heartbreak Kid. Also going on, remember we had Pam Anderson involved. Okay.
Yep.
So she's involved. They start off the pay-per-view with her. They're doing like a cattle call where all the wrestlers are like, kind of like trying to like whistle at her and wave to her. Didn't age well, but that's how they started the show. And Pam Anderson, man, she was a big, big star back then.
At the time. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Only other thing I noticed going on at this time was, WCW over the weekend of the Rumble had a house show in Pittsburgh, which is where I grew up. And, you know, I realized I had never been to a WCW show because they didn't ever do Nitros. And they ran in a smaller building in Pittsburgh because the WWF had the like monopoly over the bigger building. That's kind of how these buildings used to work back then. And they'd get them into guarantee or, you know, they'd block the other promotion in some of these buildings. But I you know, WCW used to have shitty house shows. I don't know if you remember that or not. Did you ever go to one?
Not a WCW one, no.
Because like none of their big stars were on it. So like you'd like be like, oh, WCW's in town, let me check it out. And then it would be like, oh, the NWO's not there because they don't, you know, work house shows. And you know, you just get like these like lousy cards. And I was never into them enough that I wanted to see like, you know, a lousy house show at a smaller venue. So the last thing, Jeff, I thought this was funny. So I was reading some of the reviews for this show, and one of the guys, this was like a fan review, he was like, it's 10 out of 10, great show, and I hope someday we get to see Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker.
Ooh, some days.
I just thought that was cool. That was funny to read, right? Like, he's like, oh man, what a great match that would be at some point. And, you know,
something to look forward to, you know?
And here we are, you know, you imagine what you're going to get, what, 15 years later, two of the best all-time classics. 2 years later, you're going to get the Hell in the Cell match. So the casket match 3 years after this. So I thought that was fun. But, you know, it seemed like a well-reviewed show, and more good than bad on this thing, man. Good angles, some good matches, a really good Royal Rumble, the title match we're going to cover. So Brett Diesel storyline standpoint, how do we get to it?
Yeah, so a few things happening here. So we have to go back a little bit, like I like to do here on the show, of like, it was actually after WrestleMania X10, 1994, so just this year before. Bret Hart, he actually had been feuding with Owen, and then he actually, that's when it kind of started to feud with Diesel as well too. So if you remember that WrestleMania, Hart actually beat Yokozuna, which was after Yokozuna beat Lex Luger, but Owen earlier in the card had actually beaten Bret. And so Bret had a busy night that night. But even though he lost, Owen did beat Yokozuna. So you also had Jim Neidhart coming back to that point, kind of reuniting with him. It was that King of the Ring 1994.
Well, remember too, at WrestleMania 10, what's Diesel doing? He's the bodyguard for Shawn Michaels.
For Shawn Michaels, yeah.
Working a match. Wasn't even like really like a, you know, big time wrestler at that point. Crazy how you fast forward a year and the guy's your champion in a main event.
Right. And so it was actually just a little bit after this, that June, that 1994, where Hart actually defended the title against Diesel. And so, you know, so right out of the gate, like mid 1994, they're kind of having matches and kind of, you know, getting involved with one another. So Shawn Michaels, though, interfering during that match, kind of, you know, getting the jackknife powerbomb, you know, before he could pin Hart, Neidhart interfered. And so just, you know, a lot of kind of back and forth with that, you know, King of the Ring tournament and kind of how that played out. That's that kind of a different story, but Owen was involved in that too. So Bret was really pretty much very involved with Owen in the storyline through this kind of mid 1994. It actually led to their cage match, which was at SummerSlam that summer. This was, you know, up there as one of the greatest matches ever, one of the best feuds ever. And so this is one that you and I might have to next summer kind of revisit and kind of take a look at and kind of talk about a little bit. And so weird how this played out, but, you know, and don't know, you think of him more as like a comedic role nowadays, but he actually ended up losing the belt. Bret did at Survivor Series that year. It was a submission match against Bob Backlund. I had forgotten about this one, but it was the throw in the towel stipulation where you had Owen was with Backlund. You had Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, with Hart, and they had to kind of throw the towel in for the wrestler that they were representing. You had, you know, the crossface chicken wing, which it just, I think the name just kind of turns me off to that move and kind of dealing with that. And so, you actually had like Owen and like his, like their mom throwing, it was just odd. But anyways, Backlund got the title at this point. And so, he would come back to like that feud eventually with Backlund a little bit here, but you know, really he was the best wrestler of 1994. Bret was, and this is actually the second year in a row he had gotten that. That was from PWI. And so Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So Bret was really riding high and wasn't really like doing a whole lot with Diesel. And so it was actually 3 days after this that Diesel beat Backlund. It was actually in 8 seconds with a jackknife powerbomb to become the champion. So with, you know, really by the end of that year, though, that Bret, like, he wasn't as involved in like the kind of, you know, the title picture and, you know, not, you know, seeing him every week and things like that. But he was really kind of, you know, Diesel had really elevated himself up the, like this entire second half of the year to really the point he won the title. Bret kind of, I don't want to say take a back seat, but just kind of different path of kind of what he was doing and what was going on. And so Interesting, though, kind of reminder for everyone that Nash actually left WCW, signed a contract with WWF. This was 1993. So got to remember he was with them. And then this is long before the Outsiders and things like that. But kind of got pulled over by Shawn Michaels, actually. His nickname, you know, the Big Daddy Cool, you know, kind of doing that. The Diesel kind of coming from, because he's actually from Southeast Michigan, where I grew up as well too. And so that kind of Motor City Diesel, the leather, like that was just what they were going for. From what I read, it was actually Shane that came up with the name, because Detroit being the Motor City, the Diesel, it just kind of made sense. And so, like you said a little bit, like, you know, Diesel started out as Sean's bodyguard, you know, two dudes with attitudes, like that's what they were. You know, making his debut, it was actually his debut was assisting Michaels and beating Marty Jannetty for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. He eventually won it kind of early 1994 from Razor Ramon. And so, you know, just already, you know, while he wasn't necessarily feuding with Brett during this time, he was coming up through the ranks, like absolutely. And so you actually had both of these guys. Both Sean and Diesel winning the WWF Tag Team Championship that summer. Nash was actually a double champion. And so we got Brett with, you know, the big title. Diesel's got two other titles. You know, he ended up losing the belt or the Intercontinental belt back to Razor Ramon at SummerSlam that summer. And then you had the kind of breakup of Diesel and Michaels, which we've talked about before here, how they, you know, vacating the titles when they were tag champs and kind of having their match. And so, again, like we said, beating Bob Backlund to get the title. And then, you know, after Brett had dropped it, it was actually Madison Square Garden where Diesel beat Backlund. And then Diesel pretty much because, you know, just the story, and I say the storylines, but just kind of how it played out with, you know, where they had been, where their, you know, their concurrent storylines were going, that it just made sense for these guys to kind of have their match and kind of move forward. And so it was decided that, you know, Diesel said he would give Hart the match. It would have been that following month at Royal Rumble, if, you know, to kind of close out the year. And that's how we got here. And so while they didn't have a ton of, matches that led up to this and kind of, you know, I say a long build where they were interacting with each other, they were kind of in and out of each other's universes. And, you know, I say, you know, interacting with each other and trading belts that they each kind of had and were dealing with. So it's just one of those where, yeah, you know, it makes sense because from that point, but like overall, I kind of a really long build that just wasn't there. But that takes us into this match, Royal Rumble 1995, though.
Yeah, it feels more like, hey, you guys are big stars, so you're going to wrestle each other, as opposed to, you know, there being a big personal issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, but, you know, hey, it doesn't mean that, well, you know, we don't have a good match here. And so, yeah, we'll just have to see what happens.
We got a lot to talk about.
I'm ready if you are, man.
All right, I'm ready. So here's the deal. If you want to watch it with us, we are at the 57-minute mark of Royal Rumble 1995 on the WWE Network. Royal Rumble 95, 57-minute mark. Jeff, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
All right, we got both guys in the ring. I'm gonna start. I know we got a lot to talk about during this match. A lot of things happening, a lot going on. But I've got some Rumble trivia for you here.
Ooh.
And so I will say that, like, so you talked about, and this is one we'll talk about a little bit after here. Both guys kind of fist bump in the middle of the ring. This was an odd Rumble. Like during this show, because yes, you said it, like the intervals between guys was 60 seconds. Like nowadays we say 90, you know, minute and a half, 90 seconds. But for you, yeah, this was an odd Rumble that it was 60 seconds. So I actually looked up this last year's Royal Rumble, okay, and to see like kind of what was, you know, what was the average. And so it was while 90 seconds was kind of what they were shooting for, the average was a minute and 46 seconds between people coming in and out. Now there were some people that it was longer than 2 minutes. It just kind of depended on what was going on. There was Keith Lee was one, Braun Strowman. There was a few guys where it took a little bit longer, but yeah, this Rumble was just a little odd in that sense. And so now little Rumble trivia for you here. Like I said, now this is a card.
Real quick, just a good little start to this match, man. I don't know, pretty intense going after it. You know, Brett's kind of picking on him a little bit. You know, it's tough with Diesel being like
huge,
that big, but then being a baby face, you know, it's just,
yeah. And both guys working on Brett getting spilled out the outside here. So there have been, do you know how many times in Royal Rumble history that the Royal Rumble has not been the main event? And so there have been 33 men's rumbles. Do you got a rough estimate for how many of those have not had the rumble itself as the main event?
10.
6.
Okay. So, I mean, the women, I know the women finished 1 year, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so,
and like the match we're going to cover next week finished last, because I was there. I remember that.
That would have been the most recent. Yes. And so that was the 2013. That was the most recent one. It was 2006 was the one prior to that where the Rumble was not the main event. Do you remember what the main event was in the Royal Rumble 2006?
No.
Kurt Angle versus Mark Henry for the World Heavyweight Championship.
That closed the show?
Yes.
Oh boy. Okay.
And so, and that was, it was down in Miami, that one. So okay. 2006. And so, and it was interesting because that was the Rumble that Ray won and lasted for over an hour.
But they didn't finish it with that. Interesting.
And then it was actually, there were two matches after that, which I was surprised. And so you had the Rumble and then you had John Cena beating Edge for the WWE Championship. And then Kurt Angle beating Mark Henry for the World Heavyweight Championship. So just kind of, I think we can say that that was not good booking at that point, which was definitely interesting. But, and then the first time ever where the Rumble did not kind of main event, it was actually one of our participants from this one, and it would have been the year after this Rumble. It would have been Rumble 1996, where Bret Hart took on The Undertaker for the World Heavyweight Championship. And that was one of Michael's, his second time winning it two times in a row winning the Rumble.
And it came down to him and Diesel, and he super kicked Diesel out to win it. It was fantastic.
Yes. Yes. And so and for about 30 minutes or so. Yep. So just a little Rumble history for you. I'm going to try and sprinkle some of this in here for since we got a few weeks of the Rumble.
But, yeah. I love it.
I like going back and kind of checking some of this out, but I think it definitely interesting just how it kind of, how they've booked the Rumble over the year. It just feels odd even saying like the Rumble hasn't always been the main event.
So I realized something interesting while you were going through the build, which is, think about this, neither, and this is not in an era where many guys held the world title, but neither Bret Hart nor Diesel had a like big time televised world title win. Brett's was like in Canada, like they may have aired it on primetime or one of their weekend shows. But I mean, it certainly wasn't on a pay-per-view or on anything big. And then Diesel won his title in a house show in Madison Square Garden. And so to me, that drives me nuts because remember, we're out of this era now. I mean, every once in a while you get like a decent world title win on a big stage, but even Daniel Bryan had held it before, but that was still a good one. McIntyre this year, man, would have been awesome in front of a crowd. But you just don't really get those like memorable first time world title wins. And so they were special and meant something back then. But both of these, I mean, Bret Hart, like you couldn't have figured out a better way to get the title on him, you know, and I know they didn't have a bunch of pay-per-views, but it was just like, it was such a throwaway thing that like you didn't even really know happened. Okay. And then, and Flair just won the title off Savage in another kind of bullshit thing. It's like, man, if you could have just gotten the title on Bret Hart, like the right way, that would have been great. And, you know,
And to your point too, this was a period, because I'm kind of looking it up real fast as we're sitting here talking, like the title didn't change hands a lot during this time. Like, there were some changes, but like Yokozuna won it, Brett, Bob Backlund, then you had Diesel and you know, kind of, you know, back and forth and kind of how that played out. But this was a period where I'm kind of looking at the list, like on average, like between June 1993 and really like March 1996. So just say 3 years, like guys held the belt for, it looks like on average close to like 250 days. Like they were very, like barely anybody had it for, nobody had it for under 100 days except Bob Backlund.
Well, and that's why I'm just like, man, how like if you were going to do the, like, that's fine, Diesel wins it in a quick match, but you could have done it on Raw. Like back in 95, that would have been one of the most memorable things like in the history of Raw, is like Diesel winning the world title in 8 seconds. Like it would have been like iconic, but instead it's like, you know, some grainy video from a house show. So Bret Hart dives to the outside going after Diesel. I mean, he's really, again, it's like Bret's working like is the heel, kind of like going after the baby face, but it's kind of odd because Nash is just, I mean, he's a foot taller than the damn guy. And remember, this is weird, prime, just such great shape.
Yeah, and it's odd because like this list I'm looking at right now, like, yeah, like even nowadays it's just odd thinking like literally your biggest title changing hands at a house show, like Bret Hart winning it at a house show. And yeah, right, and it was in Canada in late 1992. Like, yeah, most recently, when they had AJ win it, like, a couple of years ago at Madison Square Garden, just to kind of keep people on their toes and stuff like that. But they had kind of set it up where it could happen. Showing the replay here, that's something like the suicide dive, like that's, you see that like at this point not a whole lot, but like nowadays that's like common move. You got to make sure you know how to do it. Like we see the botches more than anything nowadays, but yeah, I feel like it's just weird. So okay, so we got you want me to start, you want to talk about Brett first, you want me to talk about Diesel first?
I want to talk about Brett.
Go.
So I believe that Bret Hart, in terms of like mega stars in wrestling, okay, because I put him in like mega star category, like one of the top guys of the, you know, last 30 to 40 years. I mean, there's no question, right? I mean, he was a prominent role, big time star. Bret Hart might be one of the most overrated megastars in the business.
Okay.
And here's where I'm going with this, right? The best work that Bret Hart ever did was when he was a heel as part of the Hart Foundation. That whole run only lasted from, you know, after WrestleMania 13, when he turns heel against Austin, until November when he leaves the company after Survivor Series. So you're talking about like a 7 or 8 month run. So the best thing he ever did in his career was a 7 or 8 month heel run. And then he bolted. Now, I know that like everyone wants to romanticize of how, oh, Bret got screwed. And the reality is he could have stayed in the WWF, right? He could have said, look, this is my home. I'll take a temporary pay cut, try to make it up to me later on once business gets hot. Okay. But he bolted. You know, he didn't have to, but he took the money and ran. And consequently, he went to WCW and he had an awful run. He didn't do anything that was impressive there. He was involved in some lousy angles, you know, for being the creative genius that he was. He certainly didn't give a shit enough to change anything. So he just went along with it and collected his paycheck. All right. And the thing is, as a fan, Bret Hart left during the time at which he was doing his absolute best work. All right. And think about what he left. he left being able to do more matches with Sean, doing matches with a brand new world champion, Steve Austin, more stuff with The Undertaker in his prime. If he would have stuck around long enough, potentially he may have worked with the Eddie Guerreros and the Chris Benoit's and Triple H and Mick Foley. All right. I mean, imagine a heel Bret Hart against some of these characters. Kurt Angle. Okay. So in summary, Bret Hart was your champion during really, really down periods in the business. Okay. Him and Yokozuna wasn't drawing. All right. Him and Owen had a great feud, but otherwise, Bret and Bob Backlund pass, Bret and Yoko pass. You never really got the Bret Luger stuff because they kind of kept those guys away from each other, even though they were in some of the same storylines. Didn't draw a ton of money, okay? By the time he finally starts doing some great stuff, right? And some people hated the WrestleMania 12 against Shawn. I liked it. But then he's gone for a while. He comes back. He has those couple matches with Austin that were great. We're back in the thick of things. And then he has that great Hart Foundation and he bolts. So the Hart Foundation tag team stuff, yeah, good tag team wrestler. IC champion, pretty solid. World champion, nothing remarkable. Down period in the business, didn't really draw money. Gets hot with the Hart Foundation stuff. And then he bolts and we miss out on these, extended feuds with Shawn Michaels, better stuff with, The Undertaker later on in the Attitude Era. We don't get him in Triple H. We don't get him in Mick Foley. Later on, the Kurt Angles and the Edges and the Chris Benoit's and the Eddie Guerreros and all those guys, we don't get any of that. But he's over in WCW doing god-awful stuff. And then Goldberg allegedly ends his career, but some people think that Bret actually knocked himself out during that match. So could it be, Jeff, that Bret Hart is overrated?
So I'll start with to the match real quick. You got Bret Hart tying up Diesel's legs around the ring post.
It's kind of working like as a heel, huh?
Even yeah, absolutely.
Faces, yeah.
Right. So here's what I think, my kind of thoughts, because, just from what you've said, and this is me just thinking out loud on some of this, I think that I wonder, starting with his WCW run after he left, no, it was not great. There wasn't a lot that happened there, especially. So I think looking at it, taking the WWF run out of it, and I'll come back to that. Yeah, I think that there was that was a bust. And I question us sitting here, what, he was not in WWF when Owen died. And so, yes, he took some time off after that. But I do wonder how that would have played out, if he was still in WWF and that happened. And so who knows, that could have been the end of him right there in his career. And so, but it wasn't the case. Now going back to the WWF stuff, I don't disagree with you that yes, the Hart Foundation run was probably, as a heel, was some of the better stuff. Absolutely. But I think for me, well, underrated to me isn't necessarily I don't know. I almost view it as could have been undervalued, because I'm almost a little bit of the opposite here, because I wonder if it's his personality and just kind of how he worked. Cause everything the documentaries I've seen is he just wanted to get in there, work, and that's it. And he didn't, he wasn't up for the rest of the BS and stuff like that. And just, wanted to go out and put on a good match. And, the stories and the documentaries we've heard, anybody that worked with him put on a good match. We saw that in Shawn. Now, I do totally agree that, who knows what matches we would have got after this. I believe the conspiracy I choose to believe, and it's, from Jim Cornette, so who knows, but is that Bret was in on the screw job. And so, making the point about they would have cut the camera and all these different setups and things like that. And so, it could have been the greatest work of all time, and we're still getting work to this day. So who knows, but yeah, I think it's definitely weird to me that, if you look at it of the big moments and things like that, yeah, going against Yokozuna, not a big deal, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And he beat him pretty quick. But at the same time, I think, you know, he had some of the better matches and feuds. And so I think maybe looking at his career overall, maybe he's overrated a little bit.
Jackknife, center of the ring.
Yep. Diesel, 1-2. No, and we got some interference now. Here's Sean going after Diesel, though. Yeah, and so these guys, like we said at the build a little bit here, these guys kind of going feuding with each other at this point, kind of going at after each other. Earl Hebner trying to pull Sean off of him. So yeah, I'll say if you said in summary, I think overall his career, if you take it as a whole, yeah, there were a lot of things that were missing from it and a lot of things that coulda, shoulda, you know, made it better. But on the flip side, I think some of like the individual moments, I can't say he's overrated because I think his individual moments kind of elevate him to a different level.
Yeah, I just think no iconic title win, didn't really draw as champion, didn't have the greatest feuds as champion. The best stuff he ever does really only lasted for 7 or 8 months. Then he bails for WCW, and not that it's his fault he left, but if he could have worked something out with Vince and truly wanted to stay there, you get him versus...
Yeah, Shawn, no, that I agree with you.
Baker,
yeah.
Triple H, The Rock, you know, and so on and so forth. And, you know,
that part I agree with you.
Yeah. It's just interesting. But, you know, if he doesn't leave, you never get the Mr. McMahon character. So what could have been?
Yeah, you never know. So
they don't call a DQ. Hebner lets the match continue. Diesel's left knee is pretty busted up. Brett going back after it. So Sean interferes, but they don't call a disqualification. Interesting.
So that's your thoughts on Brett. Here's my thought. And it kind of, you know, you and I did our episode last week with Goldberg and Kevin Nash in the Starrcade match. And, or, you know, previously, this is one where, you know, we have now watched the documentary and, you know, kind of going back to it and kind of seeing what happened and things like that. I have the feeling I got and the notes I took away from that is one, Goldberg and Kevin Nash hate each other's guts. I don't think there is absolutely like no, you know, it's kind of like, I felt like, you know, Nash maybe tried, at least he said in the, he's like, hey, you know, come hang out, get a beer. I just don't think that was Goldberg. He didn't play that game. He wasn't a part of that.
I don't understand why that's a bad thing. Like, so what? Like,
you know, right. Yeah.
Sides of it, but it's just like, yeah, the guy was intense as shit. He didn't have any friends backstage. He just did his job and went home. Oh, well, you know, so what? So he needed to, you know, hang out in the bar and whatever.
Right. And so one thing, and I don't know if you noticed this, but all of the Hogan footage was old.
Yeah. I was surprised they didn't get him.
And I was too, because, and it was very quick, but they had a thing in one of the corners during one of the interviews where it said 2014.
Yep.
And so all that footage is 6 years old at this point. And so they couldn't get any new foot. Now, whether he didn't want to talk about it, whether they didn't reach out, who knows, whatever. But I thought that was interesting. And I think one of the, I think back to Goldberg saying like they wanted him, he wanted to be shot with an actual taser. I just like, I feel like that's like Vince Russo level shit.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Like that's just, I didn't get that, you know, and I think the match is, you know, it seemed like the disco run in, the Bam Bam run in, like, you know, Nash said he had no clue that that was even going to happen. And so, you know,
watch that match. It was terrible.
Yes, it was. And he was Disco, who wasn't even in the NWO, came out to help Diesel, which whatever. But I truly wonder, like, God, there's like so much of it. But like, I actually like, yes, I like the kind of real documentaries that they do about, like, you know, The Undertaker and The Last Ride was really good. They have a lot of really good documentaries on the network. I actually thought this one, like, I think they should produce more this way, like in the sense that like it felt a little bit more like unvarnished. Like, they didn't put the WWE polish on it, and they kept a lot of the not pretty shit in it. And so, and coming from Kevin Nash, like I like him as a wrestler, I think, you know, but you know, I think his connections with, you know, Michaels and Triple H and kind of all that, like, who knows how deep like that, you know, we're getting worked even with all of that. And I do question, like, you know, I thought it was funny, and I said it on the previous show, like, Nash, you know, or Goldberg thinking Nash was the booker at the time, and Nash was like, whatever, he can think that. Yeah. Like, yeah, I definitely think he was a little bit of the booker on that one. Like, now at the same time, I do wonder how much of the behind the scenes, like, he may have played a part in that, but then did Hogan and Bischoff do something else? Because, like, he said, like, oh, they probably cooked it up in some bar somewhere. Like, I wonder, you know, how, sadly, how much of WCW was, like, you know, in a bar somewhere with some of these guys sitting around figuring out what they're going to do.
I just think Nash seems like kind of a dick, you know, I mean, just based on interviews, yeah. And, you know, I just, again, I mean, I think, like, if you're friends with him, you think he's cool, but if you're not, you know, you just, the guy can be a dick. And so, you
Brett
know,
too.
Yeah. Oh, well, Brett's just, you know, it's everyone else's fault. Brett is the smartest guy in the room. He's the best professional wrestler in the room, and everyone else is stupid. And that's why, you know, like, he blames everyone else for his WCW run, but it's like, yeah, you could have pitched them ideas. You could have come up with stuff too. Everything you did sucked. And Brett, you could have also stayed. Okay. So now Brett's going for the sharpshooter. Let me guess, ran some more interference here. So Nash already hammed the jackhammer
a couple times. Oh, yeah. Here you come. And here comes Owen.
Owen. Okay. So now, yep. Owen's coming in, but again, let me guess, Hebner's not going to call for a DQ. Look at this. So he's going, he's taking the turnbuckle off.
He's taking the pad off, yep. You don't see that. Well, you can't see it anymore. Well, you can, but it's rare. See the turnbuckle.
But we don't get it often enough, so.
Oh, yep, and he rips.
Sternum.
Whips Brett right into the corner turnbuckle. So this kind of continuing this feud a little bit here.
So you have baby face first, baby face. Then you're going, you know, you got heels coming in each one. So you kind of continue these feuds. Although at WrestleMania 11, we got a terrible rematch between Bret Hart and Bob Backlund.
Yeah. Again,
not everything Bret Hart did was great. Sorry to ruin it for all the Bret Hart fans out there, but Bret Hart did have bad matches. And let me guess, it was everyone else's fault.
So this is one, and we'll talk about it in the reviews. These guys, it's a long match. It's been one of the longer ones that Diesel ever had in his career.
It's a good match, though.
And I think yes, and it is proving, I think, to my point a little bit, like, Brett will get kind of like Sean and like AJ. There's a few guys where, like, they will get a good match out of anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Brett is proving a lot of, like, this is his kind of wheelhouse skill set that, like, he can get a good match out of anybody. And that includes Diesel, who's, you know, all 6'8", 6'9", whatever he is at this point. Yeah. Or whatever they were billing him as. Selling too as well now, like, the kind of, you know, unable to walk or move real well because the sharpshooter crawling over now to try and pin Brett, who, after still selling the effects of getting whipped into the turnbuckle. One, two, and Brett kicks out. Yep. At least got the shoulder up.
Yeah, you know, again, I've never been the biggest Bret Hart fan, clearly, but, you know, I almost wonder if he should have just spent more time in his career as a heel.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
You know, it's like just a heel Bret Hart, even in, like, you know, 93 against Hogan, right? Like, oh, okay, maybe that would have been interesting, but, like, the babyface Brett never really did it for me, man.
So Brett now
Diesel trying heel in real life.
Oh, so yeah, Diesel, yep, trying to throw Brett into the still exposed turnbuckle, but Brett kind of turning the tide on him. And again, just kind of exchanging blows. And these guys both kind of selling just the effects of how long this match has been going on and kind of dealing with all that. And so, yeah.
So you and I covered a couple WCW main events in January. I'm sorry, in December.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I feel like I've, you know, just the last couple Eric Bischoff podcasts I've been thinking about as well. And here's my summary. WCW just did not do well with main events. And maybe it was somewhat the talent, maybe it was somewhat the booking, but the WWF main events are just always better. Like, this is a really good main event. It's 25 minutes long, really good match, never really a dull moment, two superstars.
Just like good wrestling. Yep. Yeah, and this is what I want. Yep.
But in the 90, you know, call it whatever, call it 93 to 98. I don't know. I'm just throwing out some numbers. But during that era, WCW had better all-around wrestlers, better undercards, right? Like mm-hmm. the cruiserweights and some of the great wrestlers they had on the undercard. I feel like they did that better than the WWF, but then they always delivered on the main events. Like, you go and look at all these In Your Houses that started during this era. You look at all their pay-per-views. They rarely had a bad main event, but WCW, I mean, they fucked up main events all the time.
I think it's a combination of the, you said it was either the booking or the wrestler. I think it was the wrestler booking. I look at like 1995 and in regards to, I'm looking at their main events. You had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, half of their pay-per-views in 1995 were main evented by Hulk, which that's like Hulk is Hulk. I get it. But like, oh, and 7. Actually, I missed one. Yeah, where he was on that one as well, too. Yeah, does that one count? No, yeah, 6. That was a tag match, but anyways. Yeah, I think that you're just, oh, ref bump. Here we go. Okay. Earl Hebner getting, taking the ref bump at this point. Brett and Diesel. And here we go. Somebody once again. Here's Sean again. Oh, boy. Really going after him. Now you got Bob Backlund. You got Owen Hart in the ring. Like, things just going crazy. But Earl calling for the bell. Who else is that in there?
Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie.
Yep. Got multiple refs in the ring trying to break it up.
But even this, where it's like a draw ending, WCW would have still ended a pay-per-view like this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, I just, like, they put this kind of in the middle of the card. You had the LT stuff after this, and then you had the Rumble. So I can live with this ending because it wasn't your main event. But WCW, 1997 Starrcade, you had that stupid-ass ending with Sting and Hogan, and Bret is the ref, and that was terrible. Starrcade 98... Okay, and I'm guess what happened there? You had the stupid Goldberg Nash thing. Starrcade 99, they recreated the Montreal Screwjob with Bret Hart and Goldberg. Okay, but Bret Hart was the winner. So again, you know, you look at their biggest main events, and they were either shitty matches or screwjob endings, terrible booking. And I know this isn't the best match to compare it to because we're ending this in a draw, but they also gave you a really good 28-minute match, and they put this in the middle of the card, and you still have the Royal Rumble, and you still have an NFL Hall of Famer involved in an angle. So just some food for thought on that one.
Yep, absolutely. And that's right. Just like, all right. Well, so we got an ending. So let's move on to the aftermath here. I'm ready. Yes. If you're ready.
All right, let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, so initial thoughts.
Great wrestling.
Yeah, like, really good, you know, match.
Like, you and I were kind of ranting about our, you know, Diesel and, you know, and we're kind of, I've still got it on. I don't know if you do. They're still kind of brawling after the fact, but it was what I want to see from a wrestling match of really, like, you know, yes, there should be storytelling, but I also want good wrestling. And they did really good wrestling during this one. And so I think it was one that, like, it was absolutely enjoyable for that reason. Yep. How about you?
It was definitely a better match than I expected. Obviously, you hate the fact that it's a screw job ending. It's a draw, but we're building to WrestleMania and you put this in the middle of the card, so I can live with it. But really good match, man. I mean, you know, best matches of Kevin Nash's career were against Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Not that that's surprising.
Yeah. So kind of what happened here, and then we'll kind of get into the reviews as well too. You know, kind of the attacks and things happening at this point, like both guys kind of getting beaten down. You know, and the kind of, I say heels kind of retreating to the back. Bret ended up having an I Quit match. It was actually against Bob Backlund. Like we said, it was at WrestleMania. He actually won, or Hart won that one, you know, that, you know, decided that Backlund had kind of conceded defeat and lost the I Quit match. He then, odd here, but like Bret's feud with Owen was like not really, it kind of fizzled, like not a whole lot came from it. And maybe that's part of this too, of, you know, kind of speaking like the overrated, like there was a lot set up here. They had some matches, but then like nothing really came of it. Now they did reunite in the Hart Foundation a few years later. But again, this kind of speaks a little bit to your point, because at that point it was Davey Boy Smith, it was Jim Neidhart, like kind of having that. And so, it kind of weird. We had talked about Pamela Anderson at the beginning of the show, kind of how she had played into this. And so it was a little weird here how this played out, because Michaels actually ended up winning the right to have Pamela Anderson escort him during to the ring at WrestleMania for the World Heavyweight Championship match against Diesel, but she actually came out with Diesel instead. Kind of, you know, weird how this played out, because then you had Psycho Sid, who was then Michael's bodyguard after Diesel, attempting to interfere, but, you know, Diesel winning and retaining the title in that WrestleMania. And so, you know, Diesel kind of offered Michaels a rematch. Michael sold Sid that, you know, didn't need him. And then you had Psycho Sid kind of betraying Michaels. And then the two of them, Diesel and Shawn Michaels, kind of reuniting and becoming, you know, a tag team once again. And so, you know, just kind of interesting, you know, not great, I would say, but, you know, we'll talk about that when we get to our scores and things like that. So, where do we rank all this? What were, you know, what were the reviews, kind of what was happening, things like that. So one, Bret was number 4 in the PWI ranking and Diesel was number 1. And so you had Diesel at 1, Bret at 4. The PW Torch here writing that a good dramatic match with both men playing their roles well, although at times it was a bit too methodical to qualify as exciting. 3 1/4 stars. And so the biggest disappointment for many was the lack of a finish in the Hart Diesel match. I too would have preferred one to do a job for the other. At first, it might seem to do too much damage to one or the other in terms of establishing one as the better wrestler. But just because Steve Williams did a job for Kawada, or because Kobayashi did one for Williams, fans of All Japan don't think one is necessarily superior to the other. Granted, when stars first started doing clean jobs to other stars, the one whose jobs will lose stature until it becomes common practice. You know, they kind of compared it to the what was happening in Japan and things like that. And so he said, had there been a clean finish, and this is the overall card, like had there been a clean finish, I probably would have gone with a 7.5 and given the show a 7.5 instead of a 7. So ranking the match at a, 3 1/4 stars. Now the Wrestling Observer and the Rumble was not ranked well at all. This one was 2 stars. And so you had 3.5 or 3.25 for that match. And then you had only 2 stars for the Rumble. So not, you know, a big fan there. So the Wrestling Observer newsletter though, on this one, Dave Meltzer. So it said, while the Hart Diesel match was excellent, not so much from a move standpoint as from storytelling or as from telling a story standpoint, and Hart did a great job of getting Diesel over as a gutsy, credible champion. The booking was also too preposterous. Not calling DQs for outside interference is fine if they are trying to get across the message that they are eliminating screw jobs, but instead they ended with a finish after or funny finish or without a finish after all that. Anyways, 3 run-ins and 1 ref bump is getting a little silly. And so, you know, kind of interesting too, kind of getting into that. And so, you know, a little bit more, even when he tied Diesel's shoes together and had him wrapped around the post and started stomping him, the fans wouldn't turn on him. However, even though Brett was overwhelmingly the crowd favorite, those said that Brett received, or yeah, those live said Brett received more than twice as many cheers as Diesel, although neither was booed. It was in no ways the embarrassment 1 year earlier when Brett had paired off with Lex Luger and the crowd booed Lex heavily. Diesel was never booed. It was only Brett being more popular. However, in a sense, with all the work done trying to make Diesel into the next Hulk Hogan, complete with the 8 second title win, which actually references back to him in the Iron Sheik, it appears Diesel's problems in selling tickets in the headline position aren't just to be blamed on Bob Backlund. He gave this one 4.25 stars. So you got 4.25, you got 3.25. And kind of some just interesting takes and kind of, you know, things all around. So, Tom, go for it. I'll let you kind of start us off here.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like you could probably say this about a lot of matches and a lot of eras of wrestling, including now. But why can't we just have clean finishes?
Yeah.
Like, why can't it just be, hey, these two were awesome, and tonight Diesel was the better man. Okay. And even if like you wanted to be somewhat of a screwy finish, maybe Owen would have knocked out Brett during the match, but Diesel didn't see it. So he wins. And then, you know, they all attack Brett afterwards and Diesel saves them and they shake hands afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. You know, like, I don't know, man. Or you can get Sean involved at that point too, if you wanted to mix him in there. But I just don't get it. So I hate the screwy finishes because I don't think it's necessary. I mean, look, they were both stars. It's not like you had to protect them, right? All you do is piss people off. And it's like, how many pay-per-view buys over the years did they lose from people that were like, you know, like, they just kind of fuck with me a little bit and I really don't need to, you know, watch this. Right. I just, it's like the rematches the next night after a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Which thank God the rematch clause is gone, but, yeah,
so,
I hear you.
So that's my thought. So look, build nothing special. Right. I mean, they had been intertwined and they had, you know, whatever, they had feuded and they had, you know, been in the main event mix, but there was no major personal issue there. You had two baby faces, you know, they kind of both worked as heels along the way. It just didn't fit for me. Really good match overall, though, all things considered. The finish, as we've talked about, no. And then, you know, they just kind of went their own way after that. So there's no real major aftermath to it. I mean, Brett had a terrible WrestleMania match. You know, Sean and Diesel, pretty good match. You know, but again, wasn't drawing a ton of money. It wasn't even the main event. So I got this overall, give me a 6. What about you?
That's actually right where I'm at. And so, hey, because I think, yeah, just overall, I the match for me, I don't agree with, like, it was lackluster, methodical. I thought, you know, maybe it could have been a couple minutes shorter, but overall I thought it was just fine and pretty good. So, and that's what I look for, like, you know, and then, but overall, like, the build, there wasn't a ton there. Like you said, the aftermath, they, like, it just, you know, it was almost like they were, like, you know, putting, you know, they were just building their other stories instead of the story between them. Like, this was the kind of, you know, the stepping stone to get to other stories, but then those other stories didn't really pan out like they should have necessarily. And so, or not even necessarily, but they just didn't go forward with them. So who knows? But I think this is just one of those where, yeah, like, you know, and this was ranked fairly high, like we said, in regards to like star quality. And it was on a couple lists of just kind of good ones that, you know, it ranks up there. It's a non-Rumble match because you and I did not want to sit through a whole Rumble match. But yeah, I think that like six, just, it just feels right on this one. You know, who knows? And like all the run-ins. Yeah, I agree. Like, you and I, you know, I love a good ref bump, but yeah, it call the match right versus, you know, the two run-ins plus that, plus more interference. Like at what point do you say, okay, like, yeah. And you know, it's just not worth it at this point. You know, to kind of, you know, to for use that to get to the stepping stone, it wasn't worth it. So yeah, I don't know, but okay, well, 6-6,
that's it.
Not a great score, you know, for adding it up, but that's how it happened. So
all right, that's it.
At payoff pod, you know where to find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. We haven't said it in a few weeks, so I'm gonna
tell us what you thought. Tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, what you agreed with, what you didn't agree with. So, as always, thank you for joining us on another episode of The Payoff.